This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
Okay. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillah wa salatu wa salamu ala rasulillah wa ba'd. Alhamdulillah, welcome to our Friday family night about the topic of marijuana. We're going to be talking about the recreational use and the medical or medicinal use of marijuana from an Islamic perspective. So what does Islam actually say about this? This is a really big topic that people are talking about nowadays. And there was just major news recently about Canada legalizing cannabis and marijuana as well. So we're going to try to make this as comprehensive as possible. We have Isha at 9 o'clock, right? Is that correct? Yes, 9. So that means we have like less than an hour to cover. So what I like to do, I'm just going to give you a disclaimer. I try to cover topics in a lot of depth. We only have a little bit of time. So I'm going to be covering a lot of things because there are a lot of people who are going to be watching this video later on, 1 year later, 3 years later, and they want something comprehensive and they want something that's going to be relevant, you know, for the years to come. So I'm going to be addressing some details that maybe you may not be interested in, but there are other people out there who are very interested in some of these details. Okay, so with that, let's begin. So what is marijuana exactly? Okay, so I know a lot of you probably know what marijuana is, but some of you don't know all the details about it, so I'm just gonna explain it. I'm assuming that people, I like to teach from an assume zero perspective. Start from the beginning. So cannabis is a plant that's been cultivated, you know, since the beginning of history. It's been there for a very long time. And in Arabic, the term is qinnab. So there's actually an Arabic term for that as well, if you've come across it. And in books of Islamic law, you find the term being used as well for the plant. Now, there are different strains of this plant. There is cannabis sativa, there is cannabis indica, and many other different strains of cannabis. And what happens is, this is a very important plant for a number of reasons. Because what happens is, different parts of the plant actually get cultivated for very different purposes depending on what you want to be doing with this plant. So there's a plant that's known as hemp. Hemp is a variety of the cannabis sativa plant. It's still a cannabis plant. It's the same plant that's used to produce marijuana, you know, that people smoke, but it's totally different in the sense that it's cultivated differently. It has different, you know, chemical compounds in terms of the amount that it has, and it's used for industrial use. So for example, it's used to make clothing. It's used to make paint. It's used to make insulation. It's used to make fiber and rope and so many other things. So hemp is all around us. It exists in all parts of the world. Yet hemp production has been banned in the United States of America anyways for decades. But we import it for the most part. And most of that is imported from France, even though it's also banned in France. Hemp is not banned in France, but cannabis sativa with a higher concentration of, you know, psychoactive drugs is also prohibited to be grown in France. So cannabis is the plant itself. And what you do with that plant is going to determine what ends up becoming marijuana. So there's different ways to grow these plants. And you could breed them in different manners. You could, you know, process them in different ways. And one of the most significant things for our talk about the cannabis plant is that if you grow it in a specific way, you can actually utilize the leaves to be, you know, ground and prepared in a certain way to cause psychoactive effects. When the leaves or when a cannabis plant has the ability to cause psychoactivity in the mind of a person, it's colloquially known as marijuana. Okay, so that's the marijuana, the drug that we're talking about. It has a ton of different nicknames. I'm not going to go through that. If you ever went to, you know, fifth grade DARE, drug abuse resistance education program or whatever, you remember the police officer giving you all the different names and all that, weed and grass and Mary Jane and pot and bud and all of those, you know, other names. There's so many different names for it. So that's what we're talking about here. Okay, now the flowers of this cannabis plant, if they're prepared in the right way and they're not hemp, they can actually be used for consumption. And what ends up happening is you actually take this. So I mentioned, yeah, two types. There's indica and sativa have different effects. There's other cannabis plants as well. These are the two most popular. So this is hemp, by the way. So hemp is very important in that you can actually get the fibers for it. It's used throughout the entire world. But it cannot intoxicate you, cannot get you high. This is marijuana in its form that people will generally roll it up. So what will people normally do? They're normally going to process those leaves from the cannabis plant. They're going to prepare it for smoking. So they'll roll it and they'll smoke it. The thing that they're smoking is called a joint or a blunt or whatever other terms are out there. Another way of smoking is it is by using a water pipe or what's called a bong. So they'll go and they'll inhale it from here and they'll smoke it that way. Cannabis can also, or marijuana specifically, can also be eaten. So you could have it in edible form. So we were thinking about playing a trick on people. And actually, you know, in the past we've done events like halal, we had biryani night. And then we had, what was the other nights we had? We had halal burger night. So we were thinking, what was that? Taco night, right. We had taco night. We have an upcoming halal Chinese night with Chinese food. So we were thinking about doing like a halal brownie night just as a joke. But we decided not to do that. All right. Anyways, so you can consume it as well. So you can make it into a brownie. You can make it into candy. And... you know, interestingly, some of you, has anyone ever tried a drink called lassi, like mango lassi? You've had that before? Okay, so there's something called bung lassi as well, which is basically marijuana lassi. In India, it's very popular because it's part of the religion of Hindus. All right, so they actually have, this is a bung shop right here, government authorized. They make bung pakoras. If you've ever had a pakora, they make bung, you know, what is the sweets called? Barfi and like all of these other, you know, products. So people, you can consume it in different ways, and it's consumed throughout many different parts of the world, and they have different amounts of the substance to give you that euphoric effect in there. Okay. All right. So why do people smoke marijuana? Okay, so that's obviously the most important question. Right. So why do people smoke marijuana? Well, they have a specific reason for doing that. And I think most of you understand that. So first of all, let's put it this way. 52% of Americans have tried marijuana at least once in their life. That's over half of the U.S. population. If that's the American population at 52%, you would probably estimate that it's probably not that far that Muslim Americans have also tried maybe at a rate of 10%, 5%, maybe 20%, which means that marijuana is prevalent in our society, and whatever's prevalent in our society is also going to start to affect the Muslim community, regardless of what their views are on it. So that's why probably a lot of parents are here as well. They're concerned for their children or their grandchildren or something along those lines. So why do people smoke it? Well, it's because marijuana has a number of chemical compounds inside of it, and two of those chemical compounds are the most important to know about and understand. One of them is called THC, and that's tetrahydrocannabinol, delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. THC is basically the psychoactive part of marijuana, which gets you that high feeling. And then there's another chemical compound called CBD, which is a cannabidiol. Cannabidiol is a different component, but it's not psychoactive. Okay, and we'll talk more about that in a moment. So THC is psychoactive. So when you eat it, when you eat marijuana, which has a THC content that is significantly high, when you inhale it, when you rub it, however it gets into your body, what's going to end up happening is you will get that psychoactive effect. So what's going to happen in the beginning is you start to get buzzed, okay? So there's different terms that are used. First thing that's going to happen is you get a little bit buzzed. Initially, your perception starts to be distorted a little bit in the beginning. And then eventually, you're going to get what's called high. And that's why most people actually consume marijuana in some shape or form, because they want to get that high feeling. What a high basically is you have an elated, energetic, overconfident, euphoric feeling in yourself. And usually what people do is they exhibit like an uncontrollable laughter. They'll laugh at, you know, a lot of things, whether they're really funny or they're not. They can't control themselves, and they'll do that. Now, different strains of marijuana are going to cause slightly different effects. So I mentioned the two strains, the two most popular strains are cannabis sativa and cannabis indica, right? So these strains are going to determine what type of high you get. And also the amount of THC that's present in the marijuana is going to determine what type of effects you're going to have. After you get high, you enter into another state of what's called being stoned. Okay? And the stone state is basically after the high, is basically when someone is very calm, they're lethargic, they're just feeling down, and they say, oh man, this person is stoned, and they're just kind of like laying back and they're not really doing anything, and you can't really get any work done, and you're not very productive. So that's what ends up happening. And different, like I said, different strains will give you different highs, they'll give you different feelings of being stoned and different experiences of being stoned, depending on the amount of THC you have. So this is really important to understand what THC is and what role THC has in why people actually consume marijuana in the first place. There's another, the other compound, as I mentioned, was CBD, which is cannabidiol. CBD does not have any psychoactive effects. In fact, research indicates that it blocks the effects of THC. So the more CBD you have in a product, the less effect that the THC is gonna have in your body, okay? So now, what's important to understand is that when it comes to the American context, when it comes to the legalization of medical marijuana in the state of California in 1996, being the first state to, you know, legalize medical marijuana and all of that stuff, what you end up finding is these marijuana dispensaries, okay? So the marijuana dispensaries that exist, and now in California, it's, you don't even need a card, you can go there. This one is the one off the 55 freeway. You've probably driven by it several times. It's got the little plant, white plant coming out with the glass cube and all that. Hopefully you only drove by it, maybe not in it. But I decided to visit because I'm researching for this project. So I decided to go and visit the place and check it out. Nina, why are you like looking like this? Research is not okay? It's okay, alhamdulillah. All right, so what ends up happening is you go there and it looks like a very modern, stylish cafe. It almost looks like a coffee shop, as you can see if you've never been in one before. So if you go there, there's a menu. And if you study the menu carefully, it gives you an understanding of what the primary objective of a lot of the dispensaries have been. And then we'll talk about the medical part later, but it's very important to understand this. So if you look at a menu, here is a typical menu. You know, they wouldn't let me take pictures and they made me delete the pictures here. So here is a typical menu of a marijuana dispensary. You got your premium, you got your different flavors. So you take a look real closely. What you see here is you got sour diesel, for example. This is the grams, this is the cost per gram, this is the ounce. This is the amount of THC that's in there. This is the amount of CBD that's in there. So here, sour diesel, if you're buying this type of marijuana, it's got 20.5% THC content, and it's got 0.27% CBD content. Now what's happening is, these strains of marijuana have been altered for breeding purposes to make sure the THC level is as high as you can get, and the CBD level is as low as you can get, for the very obvious reason of which I was just telling you. If CBD is known to inhibit THC, and THC is causing the psychoactive effect of you getting high, you want to have the highest THC ratio, generally, in order to get higher and, you know, feel the euphoric or psychoactive effects of marijuana. And then you got, you know, blueberry, which is like at 20.5, 0.27. You've got, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, it is an expensive menu, yes. So this is, I mean, this is what the cost is. And again, you know, just because you brought that up, marijuana profit is ridiculous, ridiculously high. I mean, I'm not going to give you shopping tips or something like that. But anyways, you get the point. Like, there's the profit ratio, the profit margins are extremely high. Anyways, this is a menu. And what I'm trying to show you here is high levels of THC is what's intended by most people. And that's primarily the reason why people are going to be smoking marijuana. Okay, that's very important to understand. And what's happened is over the past decades, the levels of THC have gone higher and higher because they're actually trying to produce strains which have a higher amount of THC. What's happening now, in many places, is you'll find someone who's actually a producer of marijuana going to chemical laboratory to get their product tested. And if it tests for 19% or 21%, they say, I need this to get to 30%. The guy in the lab has to somehow figure out a way to get this up to 25 or 30%, whatever it is, because it's going to sell for more money. So now there's a lot of, you know, fraudulent activity happening where people are actually getting paid because they have to meet a certain threshold, yet there's no regulation of the industry. Like, you know, if you imagine you have the USDA when it comes to, you know, processing meat, you don't have anything like that when people who are processing marijuana. So that becomes an issue, but anyway, that's a side note. So that's what people are looking for in the first place. They're looking for high THC, low CBD, and that's where hemp kind of comes back into the equation. So hemp, as I mentioned before, is a strain of cannabis, but it is a strain which has almost no THC. So it has to have less than 0.3% THC to be considered as hemp. Otherwise, it will not qualify for hemp. 0.3% THC is not going to have any psychoactive effects on anybody. It's extremely low, and it's not going to have much. Whereas cannabis usually will range, or marijuana cannabis, will usually range somewhere between 5% to 35% in THC content. Right, this menu is kind of relatively a little bit weak. You know, some people are looking for something stronger usually. So this is kind of what marijuana is. Okay, let's move on. So what is the? Let's look at the history. Okay, so the cannabis plant has been known since ancient times. It's been cultivated, as I said, since ancient times. You have people for thousands of years have been commenting on the harmful effects as well as the beneficial effects of the cannabis plant. You have medical scholars like Hippocrates and Galen talking about the effects of cannabis, the positive effects as well as the negative effects. So now what happens is that from a Muslim perspective, Muslim scholars did not encounter cannabis until significantly later, on a massive level, until much later in their history. So it was about the 6th century Hijri, right? Meaning like about 1,000 years CE or later, where Muslims actually encountered a product known as hashish. Now hashish is extremely important for our discussion, and I'm going to tell you why. So we are talking about what is the stance of Islam on cannabis, recreational and medical, right? Why this is important is because when you are discussing what Islam says about something, it's very important not to just go and say, oh, well, I'll open up the Quran and figure it out on my own. It's very important to look and say, okay, what have Muslim scholars said about this issue in the past? And I think this is really a sad situation that a lot of people don't realize the value of this. Or they just assume that, like, you know what, all these Muslim scholars of the past, they never said anything about this. Or they didn't know what marijuana was. Or they didn't know whatever, right? So what we do is we don't actually go back and we don't look at what is the history. of this, and what did scholars say in the past? And we do this on a lot of issues. We talk about abortion, and we just assume like we have to reinvent the wheel from scratch, as if there was no discussion on abortion. I mean, obviously, abortion is totally changed, but there was discussion on that. We talk about homosexuality, and we assume that there's no discussion that took place in the past 1400 years in Islam. And that's a mistake. So I want to kind of correct that. So I went back, and other scholars have gone back, and they looked at when did Muslim scholars encounter cannabis? What did they say about it? What were their discussions about it? And how does that help us process or understand cannabis for our own time? So I'm going to be going a little bit on that, to go into a little bit of background, okay? So what ends up happening is, around the 6th century, we have this product known as hashish becoming very popular in the Muslim world. And hashish is very significant because it's coming from the cannabis plant. So like I said, marijuana is produced from the leaves or from the buds of the cannabis plant, which is why it's called bud. Hashish is produced from the resin of the cannabis plant. And the resin is like the sap of a tree. Most of you probably know what sap is, you know, when the sticky stuff that comes out. So that part of the cannabis plant, that's where you produce hashish from. So it's very important to understand what Muslim scholars specifically wrote about hashish. They encountered it. It became a very big problem among the society, and they've written several books and several discussions. So after the 6th century, you pretty much can't find a single book on Islamic law that doesn't talk about this product known as hashish. And they also talked about bunj. And I mentioned bung lassi and bung pakoras and bung, you know, chutney and all of these things. So that bunj is what we're talking about, also produced from the cannabis plant, and there's discussions on that. So if you go to any book, you know, many of you, I'm going to mention a few names, probably you've not heard of these names. You're like, who is Zarkashi and who is these guys? So I'm going to try to contextualize some of these names for you. A lot of you, how many of you have heard of a book called Riyadu Salihin? You've picked it up in the mosque or something like that. It's a book of hadith. Anyone else? Okay, I expected a few more, but it's still not bad. Okay, so about like maybe 20-30% of you. So it's written by Imam Nawawi. So Imam Nawawi is discussing hashish. Imam Nawawi is discussing bunj, right? You have many other scholars that are very famous and popular. You maybe have read some of their books, Ibn Taymiyyah and others. They've discussed all of these things. So it's important to go back and look at their discussions and see what they had to say specifically. So hashish consumption became very widespread in the Muslim world. So Muslim scholars started writing separate books about hashish, and they were talking about, you know, how do we analyze this, okay? So they tried to analyze it, and they tried to figure out, okay, there's no clear cut. Hashish is not mentioned in the Quran. Hashish is not mentioned in hadith. So how do we understand this product, right? We have to try and figure it out. So they started writing many books. There's a lot of books out there you can find. One of the most prominent books is a book by the name of Zahrul Arish fi Tahrim al-Hashish by Imam al-Zarkashi. Imam al-Zarkashi died in the year 794. A very important scholar from the Shafi'i school of fiqh, from the background. He lived in Egypt during the Mamluk period. And what was going on in the Mamluk period is there was a hashish epidemic where people were using hashish and it was affecting their lives, it was affecting society. But not only that, it was tolerated by many of the Mamluk rulers, because they would actually get cuts from the sale of hashish, so they were making a lot of money off of it as well. Kind of like the argument about taxation is going to help us, but someone is going to be getting a cut of that taxation or getting a cut from some of the legislation that's getting passed. That was happening in Egypt in the 8th century or in the 7th century. So this is not something new. These are all kind of discussions that have been had before. And it's our responsibility to go back and to look and see, okay, to what extent do these help us to understand the issue a little bit better, okay? This is the kind of the cover of the book, Zahrul Arish, Al-Arish fi Tahrim al-Hashish. In case you're interested and you can read Arabic, you can go back and, you know, check it out. So let's talk a little bit about, let's move on to recreational use, and then we'll talk about what we'll come back to what Muslim scholars have to say. So the idea of recreational use of marijuana is something that is being discussed on a massive level. California is one of the few states, it's growing, that have approved it. Other states approve medical or medicinal use of cannabis and growing and all of that. Few statistics to keep in mind. According to one survey, 56% of Americans today find marijuana use socially acceptable. Okay, what does it mean to be socially acceptable? It means basically that, if you're smoking marijuana and you use it recreationally, there's no need for you to do it. You just want to get high sometimes, and you just want to kind of escape from the world, or, you had a bad day at work and you just go get high. No one should frown upon you for doing that because it's deemed socially acceptable. Okay, so one of the studies shows that 56% of Americans find recreational use of marijuana, right, as something that is socially acceptable. Now, of course, if we live in a democracy and everything is going to be ruled by the vote, and if that's what the vote ends up becoming, then you're not going to find much this legislation lasting for a very, very long period of time. So now what you have is you have four main arguments that proponents of recreational marijuana argue why marijuana should be legalized. And I've grouped them into categories just to summarize things here. Number one is they say it doesn't result in any violent behavior like drinking alcohol would, right? So it's much safer than alcohol. So that's the first argument, that you're not going to be harming anybody else and it's very minimal harm to yourself compared to alcohol specifically, and alcohol is allowed. The second argument is that there's an excessive policing cost when it comes to criminalizing marijuana, and there's also racial bias that exists in trying to police the use of marijuana. The third argument is that if we legalize marijuana, we can collect more taxes because we can tax it, and once we tax it, we can use the tax money for so many good projects, and it's going to create more jobs, and we need more jobs. And the fourth argument is that it's going to eliminate the black market for marijuana, which is also, the argument is that you don't know what other people are putting, you don't know what a random drug dealer off the street is going to be putting inside of that marijuana. So if it's legalized and it becomes a little bit more formal, it's sold by, responsible people, responsible companies, we can have a little bit more level of control about what's going to be going into it. So that plays a role as well. So these are some of the main arguments that are put forward. Now, we as Muslims, I'm going to comment very little on the political aspect here, because my job is not to do that. If you ask me for my personal political opinion, I'll tell you on the side or another talk. But we want to look at what Islam specifically says, not so much about public policy or what American law should be, but more about what Islam says about the product, what it says about usage, what it says about all of the other things. So when it comes to mind-altering substances in Islam, if we go back and we look at the Quran, and we look at every single hadith, every statement of the Prophet, peace be upon him, any report about him, we don't find anything clear-cut that is mentioning any type of drugs. There's no verse about cocaine. There's no hadith about cocaine. There's no verse about LSD. There's no hadith about LSD. There's no verse about marijuana. There's no hadith about marijuana. So does that mean it's automatically okay? Not necessarily. So you need to figure out what precedent do we have to figure out how marijuana should be viewed within the context of Islam. So with that, what we have is the prohibition of wine, both in the Quran and in the hadith, give us a hint of how we can approach this subject. So you have a few verses about the prohibition of wine. I put the numbers over here. I'm not going to go through them in detail. But one of them talks about, alcohol, its harm is greater than its benefit. One principle that's talking about why alcohol is prohibited in Islam. The second one says, don't approach prayers when you're in a state of drunkenness or your state of intoxication. And the reasoning behind that, it says, until you understand what you're saying. So part of the definition of intoxication from an Islamic perspective is that if you cannot process your thoughts clearly such that you don't you're not exactly sure what you're saying, or your mind has been altered to an extent where you're not saying what you would normally be saying, because you have a different level of control and perception, then that's part of the reason for the prohibition of alcohol. And then it says it's an abomination of Satan's work, so avoid it, in the clear-cut prohibition on alcohol. So that's the part of alcohol that's mentioned in the Quran. And there's some more as well. And then in hadith, you have a lot of different statements, teachings of the Prophet, peace be upon him, about alcohol and its prohibition. And what you find is, one of them says that every intoxicant is khamr, meaning it's alcohol, it's wine, and every khamr is forbidden. This is kullu muskirin khamrun wa kullu khamrin haram. This is a statement of the Prophet, peace be upon him. It's an authentic narration. It's narrated Abu Dawud in the chapter of An-Nahi anil Muskir. You have something very similar from Imam al-Bukhari in one of his chapter titles, and there's a lot of other evidence, you know, to prove all of this. So based upon these and other factors, now what we have is those medieval Muslim scholars who encountered hashish, they started processing it. And what they said was, Imam Zarkashi first made the argument. He said that hashish is similar, the high that you get from hashish, which is coming from the cannabis plant, the resin, it's similar enough to the intoxication that results from alcohol and wine, and it's mind-altering. So therefore, it's what's known as iskar, it's muskir, and therefore it's going to be prohibited in exactly the same way that alcohol is prohibited. Okay? And then he quotes another scholar by the name of Al-Hafil Zainuddin Al-Iraqi, who died in 806. He made the exact same analysis, and he said the whole reason why alcohol was prohibited in Islam is due to the intoxicating effects of alcohol. And I'm defining intoxication is mind altering to the extent that, you know, your thought is altered in a way where you cannot function exactly the same way you would when you're not there. Because I know there's a long discussion about coffee causes intoxication too, and caffeine causes intoxication, and nicotine causes intoxication. We can maybe answer that in the Q&A session. So he says it has to have the same ruling. Imam Ibn Qayyim al-Jawziyah died in 751. He made the same argument. Imam Ibn Hajar Asqalani died in 852. He makes the same argument. Then Ibn Taymiyyah, he died in 684. He made the same argument as well, but he changed things and took it to a different level. He was encountering hashish epidemics. So he said something very interesting. He said that hashish is muskir, but certain types of bunj, which are not really intoxicating, are not muskir. So he's differentiating between levels of marijuana, or maybe at that time we could not measure the THC content that exists in those products, but he's making a differentiation between the two. Hashish is known to have a very high THC content relative to, at that time, what bunj used to be. Now marijuana's THC content, as I mentioned, has increased significantly due to certain practices of breeding and cultivating it. So Ibn Taymiyyah makes this argument. Then we have a scholar by the name of Shihabuddin al-Qarrafi. It's a Maliki scholar who lives in Egypt. He dies in 684. He makes a very interesting argument, and he says that hashish does not intoxicate in the same way that wine intoxicates. See, there's a difference. You cannot compare alcohol and hashish because they don't achieve the exact same effects. Okay? But then at the end he said, but it is still harmful, and we're going to classify it in another category, what's called mufsid. And therefore it should still be prohibited. The reason why I'm mentioning all of these details is because if it doesn't already exist, in 5 years, in 10 years, there's going to be a website somewhere, there's going to be a group of people somewhere who is going to say that we have a historical precedent in a recognized Muslim scholar who was saying that it's okay to smoke weed. Right? And I can see this happening, but this would be an abuse of Imam Qarrafi. So I'm going to give you a little bit more detail about what he was actually saying. Has anyone come across an argument like this? One person in the back, who is that? Where did you come across it? You don't need to mention the Imam's name. Just tell me, did he say that Imam Qarafi said it's okay to smoke weed?
Yes.
He did? Yes. Okay, I'm glad someone was in the audience. So it's already happening. So that's why I want to clarify this position a little bit, because that's going to become a position that, you know, somehow says more. So Shahabuddin Qarafi is a very important scholar. Those of you who've heard of Dr. Sherman Jackson, he did his PhD on Imam Qarafi. Is a very prominent figure here. So what is Imam Qarafi actually saying? What he was saying was, he says specifically in his text, in his book, in Kitab al-Qawa'id, he says, وَإِلَّا فَهُوَ الْمُفْسِدْ فَالْمُسْكِرْ هُوَ الْمُغِيبْ لِلْعَقْلِ مَعَ نَشْوَةٍ وَسُرُورٍ كَالْخَمْرِ وَالْمُفْسِدْ هُوَ الْمُشَوِّشْ لِلْعَقْلِ مَعَ عَدَمِ السُّرُورِ الْغَالِبْ كَالْبَنْجِ. Basically what that means is he's saying, I'm making this differentiation because I have a different definition of what muskir or intoxication means. My definition, what it means is something which impairs your intellect, but at the same time, you have a state of energy and euphoria that comes into you, and that's what alcohol does. And he's saying, but when it comes to hashish, you don't have that, right? That's not what's occurring when it comes to hashish users. Okay, so that's his argument. So he's saying, that's my definition of muskir. The problem with his definition is two. Number one is that people who smoke marijuana, why do they do it? They do it to get high. The high results in a state of euphoria. They're enjoying themselves. They have some energy before they get stoned, right? And they can do something, right? So that's the reason why they take it. So from that perspective, he was mistaken in his analysis, because he used a line of poetry and, you know, all of that stuff. Then Imam Zarkashi responds with a very nice refutation to Qarafi's analysis. And by the way, Qarafi is still saying it's haram at the end of the day. It's very clear cut in his text. But his analysis was, Zarkashi responds and says, that's what your definition is, but it's a problem. And your problem with your definition is, he says that you're saying that, Qarafi says that it takes away one of your senses, but it doesn't result in euphoria. And he says, if you look at the people who eat hashish, they don't cause the death of other people. They're much more calm. Some of them start crying, and there's very different effects of alcohol, right? And he's right in that. The effects of someone who smokes weed, the effects of someone who consumes hashish is very different and probably a lot safer than anyone who consumes alcohol and gets drunk. And that is precisely one of the strongest arguments that people make when they're saying, well, if alcohol is legalized, we should be able to legalize marijuana as well. And I hear this argument being made all the time, but Muslims are making the same argument, right? And the thing is, the first thing to realize is Imam Qarafi was saying this like 800 years ago. The differentiation between the effects of intoxication on alcohol and any type of cannabis, whether it's hashish or marijuana or whatever it is, that's well known. It's well documented, right? But that's not fully relevant to the discussion on what its status is in Islam. So what ends up happening is Imam Zarkashi responds and he's saying, this analysis, number one, is wrong. You have people who do take hashish, and what ends up happening to them is they feel a state of energy and euphoria, and they may do some bad things. And you feel some people who are drunk, and they actually, you know, end up having no energy, and they fall asleep, and they don't, you know, harm anyone else. So he says, you can't generalize like this. So this is kind of the response to Imam al-Qarafi's statement. Even though at the end of the day, he was saying that it's mufsid, it's not muskir, meaning it's something that is destructive, it should not be allowed in Islam. So you got Imam al-Marghinani, he's a Hanafi scholar, died in 593. He talks about bunj. Okay, bunj is that type of marijuana product that kind of was like pre-modern marijuana product that still exists in some places. He talks about bunj, and we'll skip his quote due to time. Okay. So anyways, so scholars basically talked about a number of things, and I'll come back to Zarkashi here. Okay, going back to all of these books, analyzing them, Imam Zarkashi, this is his table of contents in his book on hashish. He talks about the different nicknames of hashish, like we have so many nicknames for marijuana. The next thing he talks about is what are the effects on the intellect and on the body of hashish. Same thing with marijuana. Then he says, is it intoxicating or is it harmful to your intellect? Then he continues and he says, what is its status in Islamic law? Is it lawful, prohibited, whatever? Then he says, is it pure or is it impure? And then he says, is there a punishment for it within society or not? And then he goes miscellaneous topics. Miscellaneous topics is the medical or medicinal uses of hashish, which is again relevant to our discussion. So this is all being discussed centuries ago. So I'm just kind of bringing this back. So what ends up happening now is that scholars had discussions now. When it comes to alcohol, okay, alcohol is prohibited in Islam. Every single scholar said that hashish is also prohibited in Islam as a de facto. But then they had a discussion. Drinking one sip of alcohol is prohibited by consensus. You can't drink any, you can't even drink one sip of wine. But they said, does the same thing apply to hashish? Does the same thing apply to bunj? So there was a discussion. The Hanafi school of Islamic law was the most liberal. And they said that if you take a small amount that's not going to intoxicate you in any way, shape, or form, then it is not considered to be prohibited in Islam because it's not like alcohol in that way. There's a difference between the two. Imam Nawawi from the Shafi'i school, he argued the same thing even though he's not from the Hanafi school. And he said you can consume a small quantity of hashish as long as it's not going to intoxicate you, as opposed to wine where you can't even take a little tiny bit. Right? So that's the discussion that was there on that. The last thing I'll mention here is we have to understand as Muslims, the reason why alcohol was prohibited was not because of the harm that it's going to cause to other people, and it was not because of the harm, physical harm in terms of diseases and illnesses that it's going to cause to you. These may be some of the wisdoms behind why Allah prohibited this, but it's not the ultimate underlying cause, what's called the illa, or the effective cause of why it's prohibited. The reason why I'm mentioning this is because the vast majority of people who try to make an argument that alcohol is allowed or that marijuana is allowed in Islam for recreational purposes, the argument they make is, you know what, alcohol, I understand, is destructive, it can harm your family, you'll come home and you know you could beat up your kids or something like that. But in marijuana, you're not going to do that. You're going to come home and you're just going to, you know, laugh at them or laugh at their jokes, or even if they're not joking, you're just going to kind of just sit down and, you know, lean back. And the point is, Imam Qarafi was saying that centuries ago. We understand that. That argument is very well known. That doesn't decide whether it's going to be allowed or not allowed in Islam. What Islam has set forth, the reason for the prohibition of alcohol is that it is impairing your intellect from being able to function in the way you normally would in the first place. If that's what alcohol is doing for you, imagine you're going to go and say, I'm going to get drunk, I'm going to lock myself in a room, and I'm going to chain my hands down, and I'm just going to sit there and I'm just going to be drunk. I'm not harming anyone. I can't harm anyone. My family's safe. Everybody is safe. What's the problem with it? All right? And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is still saying, there's a problem with it. The problem is, you're impairing your intellect that Allah has given you to be able to make rational and wise decisions, and you're taking that away just for the purpose of recreation, or for, you know, getting drunk or getting high. Same thing applies when it comes to marijuana use. Okay? So that is the recreational aspect of marijuana. If that wasn't clear-cut enough, then let me put it this way. Every single Muslim scholar throughout history has said that alcohol is prohibited 100% in Islam. The same thing, every single Muslim scholar has said that marijuana by default, or getting high off hashish or cocaine or any other drugs, is prohibited in Islam by default. That is the default, okay? Now we move to medical exceptions to the rule. There are exceptions to the rule in Islam. If you're starving, you have nothing to eat, you have nothing to drink, you're in the desert, you're dying, and the only thing you have there is pork and alcohol, assuming that the alcohol will actually, hydrate you, you can consume both to the extent that you're not doing it in order to benefit, like to get pleasure out of it or something like that. You're doing it for the protection of your life, preservation of your life. So there are exceptions like that that are not necessarily life-threatening only in Islam. And that's something that's well known. So now what happened was, is that when it came to, I'll get to that in a moment. When it came to medical exceptions, there's a vast range of difference of opinion within Islamic law. Scholars from the Hanafi school of thought in particular were the most liberal when it came to this. And they said that it's permissible to use any type of unlawful substance except alcohol. You can use pig, you could use whatever it is, for medicinal purposes when there's a clear-cut need. So let me mention a few names here. Ibn Nujaym, who's a Hanafi scholar, he said that there's a difference of opinion amongst our scholars with regards to using unlawful medication. He said it is permissible to use unlawful medication if it is known that the cure lies in the medication and that no alternative is available. Two key things here. There's a proof that that cure actually lies in that medication, and two, there is no alternative available. You have another scholar by the name of Imam Ibn Abidin, very important scholar. He said the same thing. He said it's the same thing, but then he says it will be permissible when the medicine is known to be effective and that there is no other alternative, similar to the dispensation of drinking alcohol for a person dying of thirst. So he mentions that in his book. Now, the Shafi'i school has been much stricter in this, and they don't have the same type of leniency. But Imam Zarkashi, the guy who wrote this book on hashish, after writing this entire thing, in the end, this entire thing was about the effects of hashish, this about hashish, this about hashish, all of that. And at the end, he says it's all forbidden. Every scholar has said it's forbidden. And then in the end, he talks about what about the medical benefits of hashish that were known at the time. Hashish can stimulate your appetite. Hashish can do such and such thing, can help with, insomnia. It can help with many other things. So he says, for medical reasons, there can be exceptions to the rule as long as it's proven to be more beneficial than other medicines. So then he mentions an entire list of illnesses that it is said that hashish is supposed to actually be helping. And he says, when you don't have another alternative, and when it's proven that these illnesses, and these are not very, very serious illnesses, when you show that this is actually proven to help, then you have some leniency. So he quotes a Shafi'i scholar by the name of Imam Ruyani, who died in 502. He writes in his book, Bahrul Madhab, he says, it is permissible to use as medicine, even if it results in intoxication, as long as there is no other avenue that you can get rid of this illness with. Now, few things to keep in mind. Number one, it has to be the amount that's necessary for you. Number two, it has to be proven to work. Number three, there must be no alternative available. And number four, the illness must actually be impairing your life function significantly, right? So with that said, we gotta come back to the CBD versus THC discussion. So we talked about this in the beginning. California was the first state to legalize medical marijuana in 1996. And what happened until 2018 now, that it took basically 30 seconds to go and get a medical marijuana card. You simply go in there. I'm quoting a family member of mine who just talked to me and said, you're giving this talk. I literally walked in there and I just filled out a form and I said, I have some back pain. A doctor comes on, Skype. He just comes on Skype. He goes, you got back pain? Yes. Okay, you realize you should not be driving when you use marijuana. Okay. Okay, thank you very much. 30 seconds and you're out. You got your medical marijuana card. You can go and buy whatever you want, whatever THC content you want, and you can go ahead and have it. So it's kind of like a joke in California. Almost anyone who wanted to recreationally smoke marijuana, they could go get this little card and they can go ahead and use it whenever they felt they wanted it. So what happens now is that we have this challenge. The challenge is that there's this very large percentage of people who want to smoke weed just to get high. But then we got this small percentage of people who actually want to benefit from the medical benefits that exist within the cannabis plant. And that's where this THC-CBD discussion comes in. Like I mentioned, this THC is the only thing that's going to actually get you high. It has the psychoactive effects. The CBD does not. The CBD actually inhibits the THC. So when I showed you that menu, we're trying to get maximum THC, minimum amount of CBD, because it's very clear what we're trying to achieve. But then what we have now is we have proponents of recreational marijuana who are also interested in the medicinal use of marijuana or medical benefits of marijuana, but they're not focusing, or they've not been focusing primarily on CBD until recently. Because what's happening is most of the medicinal use or most of the medical use of marijuana is actually contained in the CBD product itself. Okay, so recreation often gets disguised as medical use, and that's why there's a lot of problems with regards to that. So one of the common questions I get is, okay, if you're going to make an exception for medical marijuana, does that mean that we as Muslims can kind of invest in this market? Because it's a growing market. Can we buy the marijuana stocks? Can we buy marijuana dispensaries? Can we do all of that stuff? And what's happening, it's been happening in the past and it's still happening now, the vast majority of marijuana dispensaries are not being used for medicinal reasons. They're actually being used for recreational purposes under the guise of being for, you know, medical reasons and all of that. So we have to be careful. Muslim scholars have discussed this in the past, because when Imam Zarkashi wrote this and all the other scholars wrote that there are medical uses for this, they discussed whether or not you can sell some hashish to people for medical uses. So the discussion was this. They said, the summary of their discussion was, yes, you can sell hashish for medical uses, but you can't sell it to a dealer. That would be something that's prohibited. And it's prohibited to grow if you're actually going to be using it for recreational purposes, and that's what's going on, right? So that's what we have right now. So I'm almost done. Can I have a 5-minute extension? Please tell him. Thank you. Inshallah. Almost done. All right. So this is my concern. My concern is, if we understand what the history of what Muslim scholars have said from the medical perspective, we may not have an understanding of what's going on. So there was an article in BuzzFeed News. Who's heard of BuzzFeed before? Okay, some of you have heard of it. So there was a lady who works for BuzzFeed. She wrote an article called, "I Tried Medical Marijuana for 30 Days to See If It Could Cure My Chronic Pain." Okay, she had a problem called trigeminal neuralgia, TN, which is one of the most serious pains that people can experience. The pain is so excruciating that the disease is known as the suicide disease, because people would try to kill themselves because the pain was just so bad. So what did she do? She said, "I tried Botox, I tried surgeries, I tried so many other things." And then she went and she said, "Let me try medical marijuana because there's so much hype about it." So she goes and she buys a CBD roll-on which has no THC in it. And she says, "This CBD roll-on helped me much more than any physical therapy had helped me in the past." Okay? But keep in mind, there's no THC in it. Then she tries an oil-based medicated rub. This has 120 milligrams of CBD to 20 milligrams of THC, which is what's called a high CBD product. It's not going to intoxicate you. It's not going to get you high. She said it had some benefits there. Then she vaped marijuana. Then she used oral tinctures of high CBD oil. Then she just got high and she just took some high THC edibles and got high. And she said, "That didn't really do anything for my pain. Nothing happened." And then she said, at the end of all of this, and this is supposed to be an article promoting medical marijuana, but I don't think they realize what they did. She said, "The best treatment for me was Charlotte's Web oil." Some of you may have heard of this before. This is a CBD, high CBD product made from hemp. And like I said before in the beginning, hemp has less than 0.03% THC content. And she says, this was the one that worked the absolute best for me. Cost me $150 a bottle, which lasts a month, but it took away my pain like nothing has ever taken away before. Why is this all relevant? It's relevant because when it comes to public policy, our discussion of Muslims on CBD versus THC and the mixing between the debate of recreational use of marijuana and medical use of marijuana is going, there's a giant overlap. And when it comes to Islam, there's no overlap. They're two clearly separate, distinct categories. And there needs to be more research that's directed in a way where it's actually, one is for clear medical research and medical purposes, and the other one is for something completely different, because that's the makeup that we live in right now. So we got, you know, the United States of marijuana. I didn't type that, by the way. So these are the states. These are the states that have approved medical marijuana. These are the states that have approved CBD, and the states that approve recreational marijuana. And the list is growing and growing and continuing to grow. In 1970, the US Congress classified cannabis as a Schedule I drug. What does that mean? It means it has a high potential for abuse and it has no known medicinal value at all. That's what the federal government says in America. All the states don't, most of these states don't care what the federal government says. And part of the problem is federal government needs massive studies to overturn this actual legislation that exists. So there's a lot of discussion and debate. To conclude, last paragraph, inshallah. So we have the idea of giving access to cannabis as a medicine is something which is debated. The idea of whether we should legalize recreational marijuana is something that's debated. Opponents make the argument that it is likely to be abused, and the ease of access is going to cause more harm than good within our society. The second argument is there's insufficient medical research to support the medical benefits that exist. The third argument is it could lead to lower quality of life and result in health problems. The proponents of medical marijuana and legalization of marijuana, they say it's needed to properly assess the effects of cannabis from the medical perspective. From an Islamic point of view, there's no issue with that. Number two, it's less harmful than alcohol, which is what Imam Qarafi was saying in the first place. Doesn't make it halal, but that's what Imam Qarafi was saying. And C, it's safer than many other prescription drugs which are already legal, and we have a major opioid problem within America as well. So all of these arguments are valid, right? These are all legitimate arguments, and the conclusion really is that you have a clear basis for declaring psychoactive products like cannabis to be permissible in Islam when they're used as medicine, but it's not easy to verify whether cannabis is really gonna act as a medicine for a particular disease until more research is done. And it's not clearly identifiable whether cannabis is the best available treatment for that specific symptom, or other alternative treatments are available, but they're simply just not gonna be researched. So therefore we have a problem of whether Islamic law is going to make an exception. And lastly, we're gonna prevent a greater societal harm. Conclusion is, Professor Keith Humphreys, he's a drug policy expert at Stanford University. I like what he said. He said that when it comes to making a decision on public policy, he says there's no framework available that will not cause some type of harm. The variables in this equation are freedom, pleasure, health, crime, and public safety. And so you can push two or three or four of these, but you cannot get rid of all of them. You're gonna have to pay somewhere. There's gonna be some restriction somewhere because you cannot get everything that you want. Inshallah, may Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala help us to understand this in the best of lights. Ameen. Subhanakallahumma bihamdik. Nastaghfirukallahu wa natubu ilayk. Inshallah, I'll be available after prayer if anyone wants to ask any questions, inshallah ta'ala. Assalamu alaikum.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم اللهم صل وسلم الله أكبر.